Tired of being in the dark about your investment? How does your portfolio's performance really measure up? Is your investment plan on or off track? Get the answer at PortfolioReportCard.com. Ron DeLegge's grading system of A, B, C, D, or F will tell you if your 401k plan, IRA, or other investment account passes or fails. But that's not all. If your portfolio gets an A, Ron will pay you $100. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com and find out if you pass or fail.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host, Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Slaying fiction about gold and quantitative easing. I'll be assassinating financial fairy tales on today's show. Stay tuned for that. Also coming up, cutting your 2014 tax bill. Now is the time to do it. Not in April of 2015. So we'll give you some tips on how to cut your 2014 tax bill if you own mutual funds in a taxable account. Pay special attention to today's broadcast. If you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, if you want to talk about your investment portfolio, your 401k plan, your IRA, your Roth IRA, your family trust account, give the show a call, 877-711-5611. You can also tweet the program live at Index Show is my Twitter handle. And you can email me, ron@indexshow.com. If you want to get a portfolio report card where I analyze and grade your investment portfolio, giving you an A, B, C, D, or F, do you pass or fail, go to PortfolioReportCard.com and reach out to me. Let's take a look and see what's going on in financial markets. U.S. stocks finishing the week, mostly uneven, basically uneventful trading this past week. S&P 500 basically up for the third straight week. Edging higher. Now, we got here in the U.S., basically the focus was politics as Republicans gained control of the Senate in the midterm elections and expanded their majority in the House. Now, another factor that's been playing into the markets has been monetary policy, which certainly grabbed a lot of attention with the unexpected expansion of the Bank of Japan's, their own version of a quantitative easing or QE. And that has certainly given a boost to Japanese stocks, at least in the short run. Whether this will become sustainable is still up in the air. My feeling is it's not going to be something that is sustainable. This is a short-term boost that is being provided by the Bank of Japan. But we'll let market prices tell us whether that's true or not. Of course, market prices are the boss. We never question market prices because that's who determines the winners and the losers. Now, in terms of taking a look at some of the major asset classes, one asset class that we're going to talk about on today's show is gold. And gold got a boost this past week. Well, it was really a dead cat bounce, a sucker rally. That's how I view it. Gold has been in a bear market really since 2011, like the rest of precious metals. And so we got a pretty nice bounce. Nevertheless, if we look at the year-to-date performance of gold, it's still negative, down 2.7%. That's ticker symbol GLD, which tracks the price of gold bullion, not performing well. And especially if we compare the performance of gold versus other asset classes, that gives us some real perspective on how horrifically precious metals have performed in 2014. If you take a look at the total U.S. stock market, ticker symbol VTI is one of the ETFs that tracks this area. VTI ahead by 9.2% since the beginning of the year, and gold down 2.7%. So the performance, the percentage of underperformance by gold relative to U.S. stocks already in the double digits, which is not good if you've got the majority of your money parked in precious metals. It's been dead money, and I think it will continue to be dead money through the end of 2014, especially, and this is a major point, those of you that have been trying to pick a bottom on the precious metals market, wait till year-end tax loss selling kicks in. We haven't even hit full stride on year-end tax loss selling. Last year, it became a major factor. We saw late last year gold mining stocks, gold mining ETFs, gold-related ETFs, silver ETFs, all of those types of ETFs linked to the performance of precious metals get absolutely slammed. And this was the result of year-end tax loss selling. People just bailing on their dead money in precious metals. So we could very well see that in 2014. Stay tuned for that. I think that's going to be a major potential factor that moves prices for precious metals even lower. 877-711-5611 is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. If you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, phone lines are open, 877-711-5611. You can also tweet the program live at Index Show is my Twitter handle. Again, that's at Index Show. If you ever miss our regular radio broadcast, you can always pick up our podcast, which allows you to listen on demand. You can check out our podcast at iTunes. It's also available at Stitcher, as well as indexshow.com/podcast. So let's take a quick look. We already talked about what the U.S. stock market has been doing, a pretty good year so far. We've got another month and a half to go before 2014 is in the history books. And it looks like U.S. stocks will have another, what would this be? This will be the fifth consecutive yearly gains if these gains hold through the end of 2014. And as I mentioned, I think it was a couple shows ago, not a good time to be shorting stocks now, as well as this month, November, as well as December, because of the fact that historically, and I think history, although it doesn't always repeat verbatim, will likely rhyme by the fact that this is a seasonally favorable period for stocks. November, December, and January. Those 3 months alone, U.S. stocks have gained around 1.5% on a monthly basis. In each of those 3 months, 1.5% has been the average gain for U.S. stocks since 1950. Now, if you want to bet against history, go ahead and be my guest. But I'm not one to that's not the way I roll. Number one, I don't like betting against history. But number two, I think, you know, you've got seasonal forces here. You know, you've got the year-end rally, which doesn't always happen. It depends on the year. But again, history is very clear. And, you look at the trajectory of U.S. stocks, it continues to be up. So I think you bears, you're going to have to just be a little bit more patient with that trade. I think eventually you will get your opportunity to profit from stock prices correcting. Again, 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here if you'd like to join us. We're going to talk about the fiction of gold and quantitative easing. And as many of you should know by now, especially if you're a regular listener, one of the things that I enjoy doing on this program is assassinating financial fairy tales. And one of the biggest fairy tales is that quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve or monetary stimulus at a massive level has been good for gold. And so I want to tackle that on today's show. I want to tackle that myth that QE has been good for gold. We're going to dig down a little bit deeper and take a look at that. We're also going to talk about ways to cut your 2014 tax bill. And the time to be doing this is right now, not in 2015, when it's too late to make any moves to cut your tax bill. So now is the time, especially if you own mutual funds in a taxable account. Now, tax efficiency, this refers to purposely reducing the negative impact of taxes on your investment portfolio. This is one of the five grading categories for Ron DeLegge's portfolio report card. And taxes are very important in terms of limiting their impact on your bottom line. So we're going to give you some strategies on how to minimize the negative impact, the wealth eroding impact of taxes. Again, at Index shows my Twitter handle, 877-711-5611. I'm Ron DeLegge. This is the Index Investing Show. Go nowhere.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
So if there's a problem with your portfolio, if your investments have hidden risks, elevated expenses, uneven diversification, poor for performance, if these are the attributes of your investment portfolio, then the portfolio report card that I do for you is going to identify these problems. It's going to uncover them. But you see, identifying the problem is only half the battle, people, because the other half, once we've identified the problems, is on you, and that is fixing the problem. See, that's the whole point of the portfolio report card. It's not just to identify the problem. It's so that you can know what the issues are with your portfolio, the strengths and the weaknesses. And if you're not going to do anything about those weaknesses, if you don't plan on fixing what's wrong with your money, what's the whole point of even doing a portfolio report card? It's like going to the doctor, getting a full physical exam, and the doctor says to you, well, you've got a problem with your cholesterol, you've got a problem with your diet, you've got things that are going to put your health at risk, and if you continue in this path, it's eventually going to come back to bite you. So the reasonable person, what do? They take corrective action. They do the things necessary to prevent what currently is at hand from becoming a catastrophe. And so it's the same way with your portfolio report card. All I can do is help you identify the strengths and the weaknesses of your portfolio. That's all I can do. And that's the whole point of the portfolio report card as I invented it. And by the way, I've analyzed and graded more than $21 million since May in portfolios. These are 401k plans. These are IRAs. We feature, as you know, on this very show, some of these portfolios on a weekly basis. That's part of the show because I think it's a great learning exercise to see what others are doing so that you can understand what's going on with your own portfolio. So go to portfolioreportcard.com and take up the exercise of identifying what's right and what's wrong about your portfolio, and then the final part of that equation is fixing any weaknesses within your portfolio. Also, if your portfolio gets an A, guess what? I pay you $100. Again, portfolioreportcard.com. Go there. Now, let's talk about something that's very true to me, or I should say very close to me, is assassinating financial fairy tales. This is something that I live for, besides the many other things that I live for. But precious metals, this particular market is jam-packed with fiction of all sizes, flavors, and colors. Now, one of the biggest pieces of financial propaganda promoted over the past several years is that massive monetary stimulus by the U.S. Federal Reserve, also known as quantitative easing or QE, has been a bonanza for precious metals. Is that true? Now that the Federal Reserve's third round of quantitative easing is officially over, it ended at the end of October. Let's examine the historical performance of gold to find out if all of this QE has been good for gold. So I drew a chart showing ticker symbol GLD, which is a proxy for the performance of gold bullion, and what it's done in all three rounds in terms of performance, what it's done in all three rounds of quantitative easing. Now, the first round of quantitative easing began in late 2008. Gold, ticker symbol GLD, gained just over 35% for QE1. Again, that's the first round of quantitative easing. Pretty good start in terms of performance. But then take a look at what happened during QE2, which began in late October. Actually, it was October of 2010 and lasted to July or the end of June of 2011. That's QE2. GLD gained just over 10%. And then for the final round of QE, that was QE3, gold actually fell almost 33%. So if we take a look at this, the bigger picture, gold's gross gain of 45.76% during QE1 and QE2 has nearly been wiped out by gold's almost 33% loss during QE3. Furthermore, the relative performance of U.S. stocks versus gold during these three periods of quantitative easing offers another perspective on gold's lackluster performance. During QE1, the Spider S&P 500 ETF, ticker symbol SPY, gained 34.5%. In QE2, SPY gained 12%. And then in QE3, SPY soared over 46%. So not only did the S&P 500 beat gold's performance during two out of three QE periods, but the S&P 500's collective gain of not just over 92% for all three periods of QE easily outdistanced gold's gain of just 12.8%. Now, no doubt, fervent gold bugs will attempt to discredit the QE performance facts by arguing that GLD is paper gold, not physical. Regardless of that nonsense, that argument, GLD has and continues to be a satisfactory proxy for gold prices. Not even the performance of long-term U.S. treasuries, which the Fed actively bought during QE, though, comes close to matching stocks. Stocks have been the clear beneficiaries of Federal Reserve quantitative easing. And I want you to remember this. The next time you see or hear a talking head on Bloomberg or CNBC or Fox or elsewhere say that quantitative easing has been great for gold and great for precious metals, now what you can do is laugh at them because you know the truth. It has not been good for gold or precious metals. Quantitative easing, if we take a look at the real record of gold versus stocks, the clear beneficiaries have been stocks, not precious metals. 877-711-5611. That is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. Let's get into some of your emails. Dear Ron, most financial advisors would say leveraged ETFs are only short term, yet ticker symbol TQQQ has gained a little over 82% when you chart a buy and hold strategy over the past 12 months. Buy and hold with stop losses seems to me to be a crazy smart strategy. What am I not seeing here? Signed, Bill in Bend, Oregon. Well, ticker symbol TQQQ for our audience is an ETF that aims for triple daily performance to the NASDAQ 100. Now, over the past year, through the market close of November 7th, Bill is right. TQQQ has gained around 82%, while the unleveraged NASDAQ 100 ETF, that's ticker symbol QQQ, has gained almost 25% over that same one-year time frame. So here's the point. Although TQQQ has delivered just slightly more than triple the performance of the NASDAQ 100 over the past year, it has been an extremely volatile ride, probably more volatile than most people can handle. That's the first thing. The other thing, though, is that TQQQQ has done well if you bought and hold it. We know that. But still, that doesn't change the facts, Bill. The proper application for TQQQ in all leveraged long or leveraged short ETFs is still to use these vehicles as a short-term trade. So if you're like Bill and you bought and held a leveraged long fund, leveraged long equities, in this case, he was triple long the NASDAQ 100 over the past year, and if you're up 82% like Bill, I liken that to jumping off a very tall bridge and surviving. Now, it's thrilling to be alive, no doubt, But is jumping off that same bridge again to see if you can survive like you did the previous time, is that a prudent thing to do? So that's what you're doing when you buy and hold a leveraged ETF and use it as a long-term investment versus a short-term trade. I'm Ron DeLegge, and I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
Are you frustrated with how your investments never seem to grow? Do you feel like your investment plan might be off track? Are you concerned about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're not alone. Get the help you need with Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card. Get a snapshot of your current investments and find out if your financial plan is really on track. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Millions of people are investing blindly in the stock market. Don't be one of them. Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card tells you everything you need to know about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account. It doesn't matter what you have. Ron's free portfolio report card will tell you everything you need to know. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Don't invest without it.
So if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. I'm here every week. I'm also the founder and chief portfolio strategist at ETFguide.com. We publish a monthly newsletter. If you haven't picked up our November issue, I encourage you to get a copy. Just go to ETFguide.com. We've got our monthly income trade located in that November newsletter. We generated just over $600 of monthly income. Those of you looking for more dividends and yield on your portfolio, you'll want to pay special attention to that income mix, all ETF portfolio. Also, I'm also the founder of the Portfolio Report Card. It's a tool that helps you identify the strengths and the weaknesses of your portfolio. So if you want to get a free portfolio report card where I will analyze and grade your portfolio in five key areas: cost, diversification, risk, tax efficiency, and performance. And when we put all those things together, what you've got is a complete view of your investment portfolio. It's a one-page report that you receive. I will grade portfolios that are $50,000 or up. I don't grade new portfolios or people that are just getting started because you just don't have enough performance history underneath your belt. But if you've got an investment portfolio that's $50,000 or up, that's the starting point. And I will grade all portfolios pretty much up to $10 billion. If you've got more than $10 billion, you probably don't need a portfolio report card. But if you've got $10 billion or less, then I'm game. I will do a portfolio report card for you. I don't care if your portfolio is worth $100,000 or $100 million or $5 billion. I'll do a portfolio report card and tell you what's going on with your investments. So again, that's portfolioreportcard.com. Now, we already assassinated some of the financial propaganda and lies that are surrounding us, one of those being that the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing has been good, that QE has been good for the performance of precious metals and gold. And I just explained to you in the previous segment that that's a complete lie. That's a myth. The fact is that gold relative to stocks has been a horrific performer in all three periods of quantitative easing. And actually, it's been the S&P 500 that has whooped the performance of gold. S&P's collective performance for all three rounds of quantitative easing, just over 92% versus gold's net gain of just 12.8%. So that's the facts, folks. The facts are the facts. You can't change the history. And the fact is that gold has been a horrific performer through all three rounds of quantitative easing. Now, I did that exercise because I was curious myself, because I kept hearing these talking heads saying, well, quantitative easing's been good for gold. So I wanted to know for myself if that was true. So that's the exercise that I undertook. And, well, now the next time we hear this propaganda that gold has been a great performer during quantitative easing, now we know the truth. Now we can laugh at those experts, those so-called experts, and see that what they're throwing at us is just a bunch of garbage. Now, one of the things that I do as part of the portfolio report card is a grade on the tax efficiency of your portfolio. Now, the fact is all well-built investment portfolios are purposely designed to minimize the negative impact of taxes. That means owning tax-efficient financial products like index ETFs, which are renowned for minimizing yearly capital gains distribution. That's obviously one of the easiest places to start. Also, coordinating your taxable and tax-deferred retirement accounts with smart asset location is another great strategy for reducing the constant threat of taxes. Now, how can a mutual fund investor that owns their mutual funds cut their bill, especially if they own those mutual funds in a taxable account? Well, even if you don't sell the fund, here's something important that you need to understand. If you own a mutual fund in a taxable account, even if you don't sell the fund, you're still on the hook for the periodic yearly capital gains distributions of that fund. And those tax liabilities from these distributed gains can be especially large during years when shareholder redemptions and asset sales by the fund's portfolio manager are up. See the PIMCO Total Return Fund. Now, these tax liabilities, unlike many others, are completely avoidable and unnecessary. Okay? Now, the easiest way to achieve tax efficiency, again, in a taxable account, is simply to own index ETFs, which are notoriously good at minimizing yearly capital gains distributions. That should be the foundation of your portfolio. And so this is how you minimize the negative impact of taxes. Now, another way is to be smart when it comes to short-term versus long-term capital gains. Now, capital gains are classified by the IRS as either short-term or long-term. And this is important when it comes to minimizing your tax bill, understanding the differences between the two. A long-term capital gains for assets that you've held longer than a year can qualify for reduced tax rate. That's not the case, though, for short-term capital gains or assets held and sold for a profit in less than a year. What are the differences? Well, short-term gains are taxed at the same level as your ordinary income, which makes them less favorable compared to the tax rates on long-term capital gains. On 2014, ordinary income tax rates range from 10% up to 39.6%, and of course depend on your total taxable income. So think about this. The stakes are very high for those of you particularly that are high income taxpayers. For example, someone, let's say, in the top bracket of 39.6% that's got appreciated a stock or appreciated ETF or mutual fund would pay just 20% on long-term capital gains versus the higher 39.6% ordinary income rate that would apply to short-term capital gains. Now, that's almost a 20% tax savings just for holding the asset at least a year. Is the tax savings, a tax savings that big, worth the wait? Well, think about it. In most cases, it is. So the point here, again, is to be smart about the short-term versus long-term capital gains. Now, if this has got you all confused, I hope it hasn't, but you know, the bad news, as you probably have figured out, the bad news is taxes are going to confiscate your money and damage your investment returns. That's the bad news. The good news is you can stop taxes from devouring your money with a few simple steps, and you don't have to be a certified public accountant to make it happen. If you want to see how your portfolio does in terms of tax efficiency, go to portfolioreportcard.com. I will analyze and grade your portfolio. This is just one of five factors that I look at, but it's a crucial one. And those who ignore the negative impact of taxes, you're going to see something happen to your portfolio. And you know what that's going to be? It's going to hurt your performance. It comes back to bite you. It's like the law of gravity. You can't jump out of an airplane and without a parachute and not get hurt. I mean, that's just you know, actually you wind up dead usually depending on how high you are. But the point here is it's similar with taxes. And so it's up to each one of us to take deliberate steps to minimize the negative impact of taxes. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. We're here every week. If you ever miss our regular live broadcast, you can pick up our podcast. It's available at iTunes, also Stitcher Radio. And while you're there, be sure to give our program a review. Tell us what you think. Help others to find the show. Coming up next, I want to talk with you about something that I recently discovered. I did a portfolio report card for a couple with an $823,000 portfolio, and both of them were exact opposites. So I want to share with you some of the findings from that particular portfolio report card. I'll be right back. Go nowhere.
Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, here's an email that I was not able to get to earlier. Now, this email is from one of my ETF Guide subscribers. Dear Ron, would you be so kind to comment on the Swiss franc since you cover the euro and the yen already? I believe that FXF, now that's the currency shares Swiss franc ETF, ticker symbol FXF, is at long-term support, but your insight is always valuable. I also agree that silver at $12 is a buy. Signed, Klaus in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, from a trading perspective, I don't have an opinion on FXF, which tracks the Swiss franc, other than to say that it's a safer bet at this juncture than the euro or the yen. And from a bigger picture angle, the Swiss franc, if I had to hold one global currency, seems to me like the safest of the bunch. Global sovereign debt is still at worrisome levels, and the Swiss seem like they have their fiscal act together compared to peers. Now to silver. The problem with trying to pick a bottom in gold and silver is that year-end tax loss selling in 2014 still hasn't kicked in to high gear, and when it does, I think the selling pressure could become very fierce. Last year, tax loss selling peaked around December 20th in precious metals and gold miners and those related ETFs, and this year, I'm anticipating similar action. So that means I would not be a buyer of any precious metals until all of this selling is completely exhausted. To be a long-term buyer of precious metals or miners, what I want to see is utter capitulation. Utter capitulation, people throw in the towel instead of calling bottoms, as we see the folks on Wall Street doing. Everyone's calling for, this is the bottom in gold and silver. Of course, they said that a year ago. They said that 2 years ago. And every single time they say that, they're wrong. So we're not quite at the bottom just yet in gold or mining stocks just because we have not seen utter capitulation just yet. And this current bear market in precious metals, by the way, started in 2011. It's taken 3 years to unwind, and it's not over just yet. More time and more patience is required. And I think once you see that utter capitulation occur in metals and miners, I think that'll be a good opportunity to go long those assets. I also think what Klaus is getting to is that the U.S. dollar has enjoyed such an incredible run. And what he wants to do is diversify away from the dollar. Now, here's a couple of ideas on how to do that, besides owning a foreign currency like the Swiss franc. Another way to diversify away from the dollar is to buy assets that are priced in local foreign currencies. You're doing this automatically whenever you buy an international or emerging markets stock or bond ETF. Remember, these securities are priced in locally denominated currencies, which gives them an added layer, or gives you an added layer of diversification. Now, in this case, you're getting the currency diversification, which gets added to your equity and bond diversification. Isn't that just beautiful? It's done for you automatically when you buy an international or emerging market stock or bond ETF. So that's one other strategy. And finally, one final dollar diversification strategy or tactic is to own real assets with tangible value. This could be something like real estate or perhaps a collectible like a 1957 Chevy or a Rembrandt painting. I invested in Sammy Sosa rookie cards. The value of those has been blown to shreds by the steroid scandal. So even with collectibles, you can't always win. On the other hand, my 1949 Schwinn Majestic, that's a ladies' bike, which I've owned since 1990, has gone up in value, I'm pleased to announce. But ideally, this is going to be a collectibles market that, A, interests you personally. It gives you some intellectual stimulation, so you actually enjoy it. I think that's crucial. But also, a collectibles market that's relatively liquid. So those would be my two factors when searching out or diversifying away from the dollar in terms of collectibles. Thanks for that email, Klaus. And if you'd like to send me an email, a question, a comment, feedback, send it to ron@indexshow.com. Be sure to put your first name along with your city. You can also tweet me at Index Show. And we're also on Facebook. You can search for us at the Index Investing Show there. And you can read my daily articles at etfguide.com. Now, almost or most of the $21 million in investment portfolios that I've analyzed and graded this year have been individual accounts. But a few of them that I've done with the portfolio report card, like the one of these recent ones for a couple from Oregon, this was an $823,000 portfolio. This particular couple in their mid-40s, both of them working in the technology sector. And joint accounts involve multiple people with varying personalities, and this can be challenging. Ideally, the joint owners will have matching goals, the same liquidity needs, similar risk-taking capacity. Yet, even the most agreeable couples or family members may have unique characteristics that make their investing styles incompatible. So, how should the investment portfolio for two polar opposites be geared? In this case, with this $823,000 portfolio report card I did, he's aggressive, she's conservative. Now, investment studies have shown that women are generally more conservative in how they invest their money compared to men. As a group, males tend to exhibit all the investing characteristics that you'd expect from alpha types. The take charge attitude, the hyperactive trading, the self-confidence, sometimes even overconfidence. Now, for this $823,000 portfolio that I graded, I quickly discovered a joint investment account owned and managed by polar opposites. My risk analysis found that he's comfortable with investing in volatile sectors like biotech and technology and solar energy. On the other hand, she's more conservative and steers toward those less volatile assets. She likes the large cap dividend stock ETFs and the bonds, you know, more conservative assets. So how are they able to achieve these two opposites the same goal despite their differences? Well, I think, number one, a happy medium. Open communication is key to arriving at a balanced investment approach. Regardless of how different joint owners may be, they must absolutely agree upon acceptable maximum risk thresholds. Now, one idea is to segregate a portion of the portfolio that invests in higher risk strategies or assets while leaving the much larger core invested in a way that corresponds to the joint investment goals of everyone. That's one strategy. Another one is that to take a blended approach. It's typically the dominant personality among the joint owners whose opinion about how the money should be invested, that opinion prevails. For instance, the spouse with the least amount of investing experience will often let the more experienced partner's decision become the default choice. Well, that is fundamentally wrong. Instead of allowing the dominant person's risk character to govern how the joint account is invested, what you should really be doing, and this is especially for financial advisors that are giving their clients advice, it should be using a blended risk profile on all joint accounts. This is a logical approach for solving a complex problem. You take a blend of both risk types or characters, and then you arrive at a happy balance. And by the way, any advisors or chief investment officers listening to the program that want to take credit for this novel idea of a blended approach, I promise not to tell anybody where you heard it. In the end, it's okay to disagree about your investment approach. We're all different, but it's not okay to let those disagreements disrupt your investment plan. And so it is possible for two polar opposites that have the same investment account to still have positive outcome. But again, you got to have good communication. Segregate portions of the portfolio accordingly to line up with those goals. And then, two, having a blended approach when it comes to determining the risk of the portfolio. Well, that does it just for another episode of the Index Investing Show. We're so grateful that you took the time to tune in and listen. Hopefully you learned something. And be sure to tune in again next week. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.